everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's minor league podcast. I am Steve Seipa, and I am joined this week by Ken Lavin and Thomas Henderson. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good.
How you doing?
Good, good. So, on this week, well, not this week, excuse me, on this day, back in 1977, the Voyager 1 probe was launched from planet Earth, and surprisingly, it's still going. It's still going strong, despite being approximately 14.2 billion miles away from Earth. It's made it into interstellar space, which means that it's outside of the sun's gravity, which is pretty cool, and it's the most distant man-made object put it in space. And it's seen a lot of things, but one thing that it hasn't seen, thankfully, is aliens. Now, if it did, and we happened to encounter aliens by some chance, and they came to invade Earth, who would you want to lead humanity's fight against the aliens?
The fight against them?
Yes, because, of course, we have to fight them, because that's just how we are. So, first up, we have Will Smith from Independence Day. Next, we have Tom Cruise, who's in not only one, but two alien invasion movies where he was the hero. He was in Oblivion in 2013, which I do not remember. And he was in Edge of Tomorrow in 2014, which I do remember. And then we have, last but not least, the man with no name himself, Zap Brannigan.
So I would say Brannigan has more experience with aliens than... As living alongside of them for years.
That's right. Good point. And he is the only one that has military experience.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm definitely extending Brannigan.
Oh, easy.
I mean, he does get the job done at the end of the day. Are there casualties? Sure, but, you know.
Sometimes you gotta just deal with it, you know? Hmm. So yeah, I think he's the easy extent.
Agreed. Now, between Will Smith or Tom Cruise, I'm not really sure, because in Independence Day, Will Smith did kick a lot of ass, but he did need help to kick said ass.
But I would say that shows the sign of someone who is humble enough to realize when they need help. And he wins. You know
what
I'm saying?
That's a leadership trait.
Exactly. I don't think that's a negative. I think that's a positive. So he gets my vote. I'm trading Tom Cruise.
Yeah, no. Also, I haven't seen either of the Tom Cruise movies, so.
Me neither.
Yep.
Oh. That works then. Tom Cruise, goodbye. All right, so the first thing up this week is we need to clear up a little controversy. Apparently, the people of Rochester really like From Complex to Queens, because I received not just one, but two emails from Rochesterites, Rochestertarians, about comments that were made last week regarding the garbage plate. So, according to the Rochester Red Wings website, a garbage plate is, quote, a mix of meat, in parentheses, burger or hot dog, on parentheses, home fries, macaroni salad, and topped with meat sauce.
End quote. Okay.
Now, I took that last part, meat sauce, to mean pasta sauce.
Yes, that's what I would also think.
Yes, okay. So apparently it is more of like a chili. A restaurant called Nick Tahoe Hots is where the original recipe originates from. They're still in business, and on their website, the recipe says that their sauce is a mixture of spicy mustard, chopped onions, and their own signature hot sauce.
So we're talking Midwest, like Skyline chili stuff.
I mean, there's no, meat in it.
That's
it's
true, yeah.
Spicy mustard, chopped onions, hot sauce. Whatever the meat is that they want to use. Apparently, their Their website has a whole bunch of different meats. You could put chicken, you could put burger, hot dogs, sausages, I don't know. And then they also add big beans to the mix, which the Red Wings do not include in garbage plates. So I might have been mistaken about that part, but I will go down on record. I was not mistaken about the fact that that just sounds bad. I'm sorry.
It's just an odd mix of foods. Like, I would never think to add all that stuff together.
It's the macaroni salad, really.
Yeah.
I mean, mix up all that other stuff, meats and potatoes and hot sauce and mustard. That sounds good, but you go wrong with the macaroni salad. I don't know.
I feel like if you put the macaroni salad on the side, that would be fine. Like, alongside of this, I would understand a little more. But to put it all together is the interesting part to me.
Yeah, that's a big no with that mayo-ness. And also the big beans. I don't think that goes too well with all of that. Because they're baked beans. Like, it has that kind of sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
Like chili, you have just, like, beans, but you don't really taste it. Whereas this, the sweetness of baked beans, you have, like, the mayo-y kind of taste of macaroni salad, and then just no. I'm sorry. Yeah. So I guess that I am a marked man. I'm banned from ever going to Rochester. So I guess that's a big loss. I don't want to say it's not for the sake of our listeners up in Rochester. I respect your city and whatnot, but yeah, oh well.
I almost want to try it just to see. Like, I'm be curious to see, like, the textures and stuff involved here.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, everything other than those beans, the bean part, and the macaroni salad part sounds great, but.
Yeah, I get you.
Honestly, I kind of think it's interesting to go on a little tangent that so many upstate cities have, like, their own city-specific, like, regional cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it's just because upstate New York is pretty big. You don't really. You know, not being there, it doesn't really impact me much, but, like, you do have, like, hundreds of miles between places.
Yeah, it's way more stretched out than you would realize if you're in the city. Like, because we would go upstate a lot, me and my family, in the summers, and it's, like, a long trek in between places. Like, yeah. And they're different. Like, the places are, like, regionally different because they're not right next to each other. So it makes sense for that regard, you know?
Yep. I mean, in the context of, like, my daily life, it's just like, well, Brooklyn, Staten Island, food, it's all the same. You know, you can go to Newark in Jersey, and the food that they have in Newark is not any different from the food that they're going to have in, you know, Trenton or somewhere on the Jersey Shore or Cape May or whatever, you know? Like.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting thing with Rochester. With that, Syracuse has the salt potato. Binghamton has Speedies, and I'm sure Buffalo has something. Albany, maybe, I don't know, but a lot of food. All right. Well, speaking of Syracuse, I guess we can move on to them now. And they went 2-3, and they're playing the last game of the series against the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs right now as we speak, and that leaves them at 42-62 on the year, which is 21 games behind the first place Buffalo Bisons, and they are going to be playing the Bisons this upcoming week. They've been surging lately. They actually recently overtook the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders for first place in the AAA East Northeast. And, you know, we've mentioned this a little bit, but we didn't really go into it in too much detail because we're a Mets minor league podcast and Buffalo is Blue Jays affiliate, but, you know, Buffalo has had a very weird season this year because of the travel ban between the U.S. and Canada at the start of the season, and then construction that was going on at Salem Field, Buffalo's home stadium. So basically, the Blue Jays kicked them out of their own home.
Yeah.
And they had to play in Trenton for, like, half the entire year. But they're a pretty well-balanced team. They're fourth in the entire AAA East in OPS. They're first in ERA and you know, unlike Syracuse, quite a few Toronto's top prospects are rostered there. As per MLB Prospect Pipeline's rankings, the number 6 Toronto prospect infielder Otto Lopez is there. 22nd top prospect outfielder Josh Palacios is there. 26th prospect right-hander Joey Murray. And then the last three, 28, 29, and 30, are left-handers Zach Logue, right-handers Bowden Francis, and right-hander Curtis Taylor.
Yeah, it's a fun team.
And then in addition to those guys, they've also had three guys who were at one point or another considered top prospects but fell off lists. You have Forrest Wall, Logan Warmuth, Richard Urania, and then two guys that have graduated onto the majors recently who spent a lot of time with Buffalo, Kevin Smith and Nate Pearson. So that's a good team.
Yeah, they're good.
I'm not liking Syracuse's odds.
Those teams are always fun to see your minor league team play, just because you get like a grasp of other prospects and other top ones, and you know, like you get to see legit guys from another system. That's always nice.
One thing though, I can't vouch for the accuracy of the you know where those players are in reality, because you know sometimes national lists are kind of
questionable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're talking about 22, 28, 29, 30 on their list. If you look at the Mets' list, you know, it kind of is funky, so.
And team lists can be deceiving in that regard.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, hopefully Syracuse does okay. Hopefully they win at least one game. I think they should be good for at least one game.
Yeah.
One team that I can tell you with 100% certainty is not going to win any – well, excuse me, that did not win any games last week was Binghamton, because their entire series against the Richmond Flying Squirrels last week, the whole thing got the kibosh because of coronavirus. So they're supposed to play the Portland Sea Dogs this upcoming week, and I hope those games actually get played, because – you know, quarantine period for the coronavirus is supposed to be 2 weeks. I don't know who actually was like testing positive, who's just exposed, who needs to quarantine, all that kind of stuff. But I'm assuming that some portion of the Rumble Ponies is going to miss another week, and that's going to
suck. Yeah, I would assume that they play with a shortened roster until those guys are back, whoever tested positive.
Binghamton is right within striking distance of 500, so like conceivably they could finish the season strong and get to 500. So that'd
be nice.
Totally suck if though they're not able to, because you know guys aren't able to play.
Yeah, it depends on who tests.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, they're 7 games under 500. They have 13 games left, and they
take a run, but they could do it.
Yeah. They're 9-8 against the Sea Dogs, and then they're 3-3 against their opponents in their next series, which is also the final series, the Reading Fighting Phils. So there is a chance, but definitely going to be tough. Portland is a pretty good team. They've been jockeying with the Somerset Patriots for first place in the AA Northeast ever since going on like a 15-game winning streak in mid-July. They are in the league 4th in OPS and ERA, whereas the Rumble Ponies are not.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like the Rumble Ponies are going to be able to dominate them, or the hitters are going to dominate the Portland pitchers or anything like that. Best player on Portland, easily Tristan Casas, Boston's top prospect or second best prospect, depending on where you want to put Marcelo Meyer in there. Then they also have two other prospects that are in Boston's top 10, right-hander Brian Bello and right-hander Brian Mata, who's actually on the DL right now. And then a bunch of other guys that are in their top 30. There's left-hander Chris Murphy, our old friend Josh Winkowski, Thaddeus Ward, right-handed pitcher. He's also injured right now. Catcher Rolando Hernandez, and great name for an infielder, Cameron Cannon.
That's a great name.
Mm-hmm.
80 grade name right there.
He's not technically a top prospect on any lists at the moment, but Jason Groom also just got promoted there, and you know, whatever he is at this point, he could still strike out a ton of people. So
He's still a dude who's interesting, just because, mm-hmm. like, there's the name value there.
Jersey's Own.
Yes.
Ken, what's your take on the entire Jason Groom nonsense that was going on?
I don't really have one. I mean, he's going to pitch in the big league someday, even mm-hmm. if it's more Zabucky-ish rather than, you know, top draft pick.
I mean more as a representative of New Jersey.
Oh, he's from way down south, so I'm different.
Okay. That's kind of like the funky part of Jersey.
Yeah, he's from Barnegat, I believe. That's way down there. So. I don't vouch for them. I don't know what happens down there.
Not your people.
No.
So you think that the Rumble Ponies can get to 500? I have my doubts, unfortunately.
Likewise.
All right, moving on now. Speaking of doubts, the Brooklyn Cyclones, and they went 2-2 against the Wilmington Blue Rocks with one game canceled because of the hurricane. And they're actually playing right now, the rubber game of the series as we record. And I think, like, Francisco Alvarez led it off the home run, so that's kind of good. Good news. But they are 41-63 on the season. This week, this upcoming week, they're going to be taking on the first place Hudson Valley Renegades in another bootleg No Passion Subway Series, because who the fuck cares about Wappinger Falls? But regardless of the excitement or lack thereof, as compared to the games of the Cyclones and the Staten Island Yankees, the Renegades really have kicked the Cyclones' asses this year. Brooklyn is 9-20 against them. Part of that is because Brooklyn's pitching hasn't really shown up.
Yeah, their pitching is rough.
And part of it is because the offense has kind of been very streaky, very, very hit or miss. And also, though, credit with credit's due, the Renegades do have a really good team. Top Yankees prospect, Anthony Volpe, he's their starting
Jersey's own.
That's true. Is he from? He's from a better part of Jersey, I know.
He's from closer Morris. To where I live. Yeah, Morristown.
Yeah.
I won't comment on if it's better or not than Barnegat, but closer to where I am.
In addition to him, there's also catcher Anthony Wells, outfielder Everson Terriera, right-hander Beck Way, outfielders Jake Sanford and Elijah Dunham, and right-hander Matt Sauer, who are all in the top 30 on MLB's prospect pipeline list for the Yankees. So, yeah, I don't know. The Cyclones really felt like they've been dead in the water since, like, the first month or so of the season, despite having Alvarez, despite having Mauricio, despite at one point having Beatty, despite having now Palmer and Peraza. I don't know. What do you think has gone wrong here? I think we've all gone to
at least they can't pitch.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. You think it's just the pitching?
Yeah, because, like, they even in games that they lose, they'll score like 4, 5, 6 runs sometimes, and then it just doesn't matter because they're just losing games because they don't have any pitching, and it's hard to consistently win games when you have to score a bunch to win, because sometimes you just won't. Even the Dodgers will get shut out. Like talking about Major League, so like it's hard to hit, and you can't constantly just rely on guys hitting over and over and over again. Sometimes it's just not going to happen, and you need to win other ways.
See, kind of like I think when rosters were released and everything like that, we knew that like the Brooklyn pitching was not going to be great. But at least I know I figured anyway, like, okay, the stadium would cover some of that up. And if you look at like the rosters in the last couple of years for the Cyclones, they really haven't had great pitching, but there usually has been, like, one guy that kind of has anchored everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, last season it was Garrison Bryant, of all people. Not that he's bad, but, I mean, he's not a bona fide top prospect kind of guy either. You know, they had Harold Gonzalez a couple of years ago. You know, going back even more to the early 2000s, you had that insane pitching staff with Hansel Robles and Luis Mateo and you know, that cast of characters, Rainey
Mara. They always had good minor league pitchers, even if they weren't, like, they didn't have, like, crazy high major league ceilings. Like, they always had pitchers who you knew were going to go to, like, AAA and be good organizational depth guys. But even here now, it's like, I don't even know how many guys they have there. That, like, it's just kind of dead with their pitching staff. And their offense is fun. Even their, like, non-star offensive players are, like, solid, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is, it's just a, it's wild to see how, like, they, how much they have to score to win games.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that was, should have been the best pitcher on that staff is JT Ginn, and he is not having a great time in Brooklyn.
He's just not striking anyone out. He's just not missing bats, really. Like, even this week, he had the game that I had on the Miners Report. So when I was, like, looking at it and stuff, he only gave up a run, but he had 7 hits and 2 strikeouts in, like, 5 innings. And that's the type of season it's been for him, where even when he doesn't, like, give up a lot of runs, and he has been sometimes, it's just been a lot of balls in play and not a lot of strikeouts, and he hasn't been that dominating presence that you'd expect him to be. Also, of course, he's coming back from a very serious injury, so whatever, but also... Right. Brooklyn needed him to be a little better than that for them to be, like, really good.
Yeah, so here are the top pitchers in Brooklyn in terms of innings pitched. You have Jason Valera, who has thrown 76.1 innings. Any guess what his ERA is in those 76 innings?
5.65.
No.
I was going to say 4.30.
No. 7.55.
Oh, I did not expect that.
Yeah, that is something else.
But that's also, like, if someone wants to say, why isn't Brooklyn good with all those hitters, that's why. Like, that right there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to go past that, like, if you don't want to, you know?
You know what the crazy part is? He doesn't even have the highest ERA among the guys that are, like, qualified. Cam Opp has 50.1 innings, and he has a 7.69 ERA.
Yeah.
And then Luke Rennie is not qualified, but he's gunning for the trifecta. He has a 6.75 ERA right now.
I saw him. He is not good.
No. I love Luke Rennie, though. Because...
Yeah, like, I want him to be good because I could, like, see that. So my favorite example for him was he struck out the side, but he threw a scoreless inning in, like, the second inning, and he was, like, visibly pumped up on the mound. And I was like, yeah, buddy, I'm rooting for you. You know what I mean? Like, you just kind of root for the guy, but he throws 88, and it's all missing to arm side. So that's what you're going to run, like, a high ERA when you're like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. I saw Luke Rennie when he came, like, his first start when he was with Columbia in 2018. Oh, no, excuse me, 2019. Maybe it was 2018. I don't even remember at this point. It doesn't really matter. But I became a fan because I randomly, you know, like, I like to take pictures in addition to, like, watching the guys and writing everything down. And I just happened to, like, take the picture and then tweet it. And I guess because who the hell is Luke Rennie? No one had any pictures of him or anything like that. So Minor League Baseball contacted me and they're like, hey, can we use your picture? I was like, yeah, that's awesome. So that's I will always be a Luke Rennie fan. But yeah, his future is not that bright. Well, speaking of bright futures, there is one team that hasn't let us down all year, and that is the St. Lucie Mets. And they went 3-3 against the Jupiter Hammerheads this week, and they are 55-50 on the season. But Jupiter leapfrogged over them coming into the week, and they took control first place. And after St. Lucie being in first for, like, months and months now, they are leaving the season in second. They are leaving the series in second place, a game and a half out of first. And they're going to be taking on the Lakeland Flying Tigers this upcoming week. Luckily for St. Lucie, though, Flying Tigers are not a good team. They are 45-61, and they only have one of Detroit's top prospects, shortstop Trey Cruz. So that's good for St. Lucie.
Yeah.
also good for St. Lucie is that Jupiter is going to be playing the Daytona Tortugas, who are above 500. They are 54 and 53, and they've actually been on a roll lately. They've won 7 of the last 10, so advantage St. Lucie. But really, this week, yeah, I mean, honestly, it doesn't really matter because St. Lucie and Jupiter are going to be playing each other again for one more series in the last week of the season. So the only way that these games really matter much, or, you know, it's if one team loses every single game and then the other team wins every single game, because the division is going to come down to that last series. But St. Lucie is, I don't know, it's less of a good team now that, you know, the Jalen Palmers, the Perozas, the Ginns have been promoted, but they've been chugging along, and they've added those newish draft guys, but they haven't really been performing too well.
Kevin Kendall has, right? He's the only
one.
Yeah,
the hitters have been doing all right.
Yeah.
But the pitching is, you know, struggled a little bit there. But hopefully everyone is able to keep things going for just another week or two, at least to end the season in first and in the playoffs, because we've seen enough collapses in our lifetimes. We don't and need also, to see the minor league teams doing that too.
Also, just making the playoffs is nice for the kids. Like, they'd all rather make the playoffs than not, I'm sure, even if the minor leagues is still about development at its core. Like, you still want, like, the Brooklyn Cyclones of 2019 probably really wanted to win that Penn League World Series, you know?
Oh, yes.
Or whatever it is, championship, not World Series.
I'm sure that there's also financial incentive in there for them, too.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
And unfortunately, like, that matters so, so much. Because fucking Major League Baseball doesn't want to pay players because they're a bunch of assholes. But yeah, the end of the year is coming up pretty soon. Kind of a bummer.
It's always the end of the minor league season always kind of creeps up on me. Like, it's always like all of a sudden over, you know?
Yep. And it comes a month before the regular season, so.
Mm-hmm. That's why, because I kind of, like, equate them at the same time, and they one ends quicker, so.
Yep, just when you're, you know, when you are getting prepared for the Mets to go on that run where they, you know, win 10 of 12. And
oh, like what they're doing right now?
Yeah, and you're like, oh, man, I believe, just for them to let everyone down at the end. Unfortunately, the minors will not be there to, like, cushion the blow. Well, now let's move on to, oh yeah, that guy, where we talk about a Mets player that we probably have forgotten. And the guy that I picked this week is someone that you guys probably have forgotten. But as soon as I said the name, you'll be like, oh yeah, Max Wattel.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Right. Literally.
Yeah, Max Wattel. He was born Boca Raton. Family eventually wound up in North Carolina, and he went to Marvin Ridge High School in Waxhaw, which is a small town in southwestern North Carolina, right on the border between North and South Carolinas. He was really good in his senior year there in 2015. He helped the Mavericks go to their first ever state championships, and he posted a 0.54 ERA in 65.1 innings with 19 walks and 120 strikeouts. So, love those strikeouts. He was considered one of the best players in North Carolina and one of the best left-handed prep pitchers in the upcoming 2015 draft. And sure enough, he was picked pretty early. The Mets selected him in the third round of that draft. He was the 88th player overall. And he did have a commitment to Arizona State, but the Mets were able to buy him out of that. They signed him for a $775,000 deal, which was about $100,000 over slot value. And he had a solid fastball-curveball combination for a young pitcher. But really, it was the crazy mechanics that he had that and added a ton of deception to his pitchers that really made him look like a good pick at the time and a good addition to the organization. And he did look good in the limited time that he had with the GCL Mets that year. And then he got bumped up to Kingsport in 2016, and he looked pretty good there too. And then at the trade deadline, he was packaged alongside with Dilson Herrera, who was our, oh yeah, that guy last week.
Look at that.
Uh-huh. Continuity. Love it. And yeah, so he went to Cincinnati in exchange for Jay Bruce in a trade where I think everybody was unhappy and everybody thought that they lost, so.
Yeah. Pretty much.
That's usually the sign of an actually fair trade or just a clusterfuck.
I mean, I think it ended up being fair at the time for what, like, not at the time in hindsight, because Herrera and Wotel were, as we're going to say, not much of anything. And then Bruce had, like, a solid half season. Like,
yeah,
like, he was, like, a solid major league player.
Right. At the end of the day, Bruce did play in the major leagues with the Mets for another year and a half. Or 2 years, whatever it was, so.
And he was pretty solid for some of it. Like, he also was hurt a bunch, and, like, it was a weird time, but it was kind of a weird fit, really, but.
Yeah, so his time with the Reds was pretty brief. He threw very limited innings for the rest of that season because of shoulder fatigue. And then in 2017, he had labrum surgery to fix whatever was going on that was wrong in there. So he finally got back on the field in early 2018. He wasn't really that great, and the Reds released him, and that was pretty much it. He signed with the Sussex County Miners, which is a team in the now-defunct Can-Man League in Sussex County, New Jersey. Ken, do you have any insight into that place? 'Cause I
don't. It's pronounced Sussex.
Sussex. County. The only Sussex County I know is in Delaware. It's where them boys live, the Briscoes.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so he played with them, but he didn't actually ever play with them because he had another injury, Wattel did, and he tried coming back in 2020. He was working at, like, one of those driveline-esque sports performance places, but he never actually got back to a professional organization because March 2020 is definitely the worst possible time.
Jeez, yeah.
Yeah, to try to get back into things. So he hasn't played in organized ball since. But he is getting married in a couple of weeks, so that's good. Congratulations to him, I guess. And one of his groomsmen is going to be Tyler Stevenson, who's the catcher in Cincinnati, who's having a good season. But Max Wattel's a big Trump guy also, apparently, so that's kind of douchey.
I think guys like this, like, it shows how good major leaguers are, even, like, the random middle reliever on your team or, like, the random bench player. Because, like you said, his numbers in high school, like, no one hit him. And then he went to the minors and was, like, solid, and then it just didn't get past, like, the lower levels of the minors because – it's just wild. It's such, like, there's so many levels to how good you have to be to even make it for, like, a month.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone, like, be a star.
Oh, that's why they say, like, major leaguers are the top 1% of the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah, it's,
and then
it's
actually
really
good major leaguers are like, whoa. But, yeah, that was... I mean, he was traded, so it doesn't really matter, I guess, but it's just disappointing he never really worked out because of injury and whatever else.
But because, like, similar to Herrera, he was, like, a very legit, like, pick and prospect at the time, and Herrera was, like, a highly touted IFA guy. And
yeah, was, I mean, at the time, that was a very fair trade. Now, not having the context, you could be like, wow, they traded Jay Bruce for these two nobodies, but, you know, obviously at the time... you don't know that they're going to not really work out. And, you know, it sucks that Wattel didn't work out because that year the Mets did not have a first-round pick because of Michael Kadire.
Oh, that was the Kadire one? So that Desmond Lindsay in round two, I think?
Yeah, yep. And they drafted a bunch of really exciting prep pitchers that year. There's a lot of them, but unfortunately none of them worked out. You had Wattell in the third round, Thomas Zupacki in the fifth. Maybe he works out. I mean, I guess the doors...
He could still theoretically work out. There's right. still like time for him to be a reliever or something.
In the 11th round, they drafted left-hander Jake Simon. In the 17th round, they selected Sixto Torres. In the 18th round, they selected Jordan Humphreys. So it was a lot of you know, high upside. Well, I don't want to say high upside, but a lot of exciting high school pitchers that, you know, maybe if one of them sticks and, you know, really all of our hopes lie now on the shoulders and UCL of Thomas Zupacki, which is not the sturdiest thing to be hanging on.
But that's also like prep pitchers in general, like in prep players in general. Like, yeah. For all the ones that work out, there's so much development time for them. There's so many ways for their development to go because they're so young.
And it sucks. I mean, it doubly sucks, I guess, or triply sucks maybe in this. I don't know. But they signed all of those prep guys, and there was one of them that they drafted that they didn't sign, and he ended up going to college. That if they did sign him, damn, it would have made such a massive difference to this team, you know, to the minor league system over the last couple of years, and then to this team.
I actually don't know who this is. So.
He's another left-hander. He was considered one of the better prep guys in the 2015 draft. He went to college, University of South Florida, and then out of college, Tampa selected him, Shane McClanahan.
Oh, yeah, that would have helped.
Yeah.
I forgot they drafted him.
Yep. I mean, in that 2018 draft, the Mets did take, you know, Kelenic, so that kind of was better, but I guess they would have traded McClanahan in the...
Maybe.
Also, trade. I don't know. Yeah.
Seattle might not have wanted McClanahan. You never know. Kelenic is like can't hit in the majors, so.
Of course, yeah, he sucks. So.
He's running like a 140 average or something. He's just like getting overpowered.
Let's look at Jared Kelenic's Fangraphs page.
Yeah, it's not good, Ken.
No. He's clearly a bum. And, you know, if the Mariners were smart, they would just send him back to the Mets. And
he honestly, I don't know what you do with him, though, because he's very clearly not, like, he's above AAA at this point. Like, if you send him back down, it's just gonna, I don't want to say waste everyone's time, but.
Yeah, there's nothing more to be gained, really.
Yeah, but also, like, he's just getting out in the majors. Like, he's not doing anything. He's not really hitting the ball well, you know? Like, so, I don't know what you do in that situation, which is a different topic for a different time, because that's a more long-form that's a more long-form, like, prospect development question, and we've been on for a while. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's hard because there's no level in between. Like, he either has to hack it here, or you have to figure it out some other way.
That's for the Seattle Mariners version of this podcast to figure out from what, let's see, what are their...
From Tacoma to Seattle.
Isn't that like a 10-minute walk?
Probably.
Seattle Mariners.
Where is their complex? Arizona?
I would assume so.
So if we're doing from complex to Queens, they could do... It's very... There's a lot of trees out there, right? So we could do from complex to trees. And that's... that's Washington State.
Wadumpush.
From Modesto to Mariners.
From Modestins to Mariners.
I like it.
But, yeah. All right. So, does anyone have any Wilponery to end this week?
Nothing I could think of, which is probably not true in real life, but none that I've encountered in my recent days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't think of any, you know, this week. With everything that happened this week, I can't think of New York City or you know.
Oh, well, I mean, we could talk about infrastructure and New York City flooded.
I
can't
think how they did anything with their responses bad, per se. But, you know, with the amount of flooding that I got, with the amount of flooding that people have gotten in general, like, maybe we should do more.
Ken, how was it for you? Because I know you're out in Jersey and it was...
So I'm on the top of the hill in Hawaii.
Oh, so you were fine?
Nice.
Yeah. The bottom of the hill was real bad.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm at the top of the hill too, and that didn't stop my house from being flooded. There's literally a hurricane, like evacuation, you know, like the school, this is school across the street from me, and they are like the designated hurricane flooding, whatever evacuation place. And everything here just flooded because the amount of rain that came down that the sewers and whatever else couldn't just handle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe it would be nice if maybe
like
we can invest a little more in infrastructure and whatnot.
I understand previously New York not having any of this stuff because before global warming really started in earnest, like we didn't get these things. Like, my entire childhood, there was no, especially I'm from Brooklyn specifically, so we just never got this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's starting to happen so often, you can't just be like, oh, well, it doesn't happen here, because now it very much does happen here.
I mean, literally in the span of like a week, we had two different hurricanes.
Yeah, like at some point, like you're going to have to realize that things are changing as a city, and you have to start not letting the subways get flooded and people's basements get flooded every like 3 or 4 times a summer, because that's just not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Although I had work the very next day, and the R train was running, so God bless the R train.
Yeah, I was on the train the next day, too, and it was fine. So, like,
even though I hate the R train, because it's slow as fuck, but...
The R sucks.
It does. Alright, if anyone has any questions, comments, or whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Slipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMedSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.